right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there and good evening. Big thanks to Demi on our travels and Mikey at base for driving us through the afternoon. It is Tuesday, October 21st, and you're listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
And coming up between now and the new music show at 7, Paul Coria, Mark Langdon chat Champions League, where Barcelona already lead Olympiacos by 1-0. And we will round up all the latest football news, including the League of Ireland running. Stephen Ferris joins us to reflect on a dramatic weekend of URC action. And we look forward to Ireland's test with New Zealand in Chicago.
In snooker, Peter Brannigan brings us up to date with the Northern Ireland Open, and we'll round up today's sports news headlines. So if you want to get in touch, you can text 51552, message us on WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Ruby Walsh, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Shane Dawson. Yourself?
Very well, very well. We're keeping an eye on the Barcelona match. 18 minutes gone. Paul Corrie has been keeping an eye on it. Barcelona. Good value for the win early on.
Yeah, they certainly are. I mean, they play some exciting stuff. It was Ferman Lopez with the goal, Ruby, after 7 minutes. No surprise, it kind of came down Lamine Yamal's side and opened them up. But they're just such an interesting side to watch. Like, even tonight, there's Pedro Fernandez, 17 years of age, thrown in. Marcus Rashford's actually the eldest outfield player, I should say, at 27 years of age. So it's just dotted with like 22-year-olds. Like, you forget that Pedro's been around for so long, still only 22. They're my favourites for the competition, I think. Remember last year they went so close against Inter Milan in that semi-final. I feel like they went close last year. They'll learn from that. Some of those players have more games under their belt. Yamal is just continuing to hit new heights. They'd be my favourites. They've actually rested a couple of players tonight against Olympiacos, and I'd be very surprised if there wasn't a couple more goals in this game.
And Paphos, of course, the Cypriot team are in Kazakhstan to face Kirat, and they've already had a man sent off. João Carreira was sent off in the fourth minute.
That's the real match tonight.
That's a cracker.
That's the Champions League purists. That's what you want.
That's the team you knocks out to get, right?
Yeah. The longest trip in Paphos' history to play a competitive match, as Olympiacos, it was deflected, nearly went in. I thought it went in.
Deliver a big line there, Shane.
It was very close to going in. Shot from the edge of the box, deflected, and just hit the roof of the net. So, speaking of young football players, Republic of Ireland under 17 head coach Colin O'Brien has named a 21 player squad for next month's World Cup in Qatar. 16 of the squad will contest Ireland's first World Cup at this level, having come through the League of Ireland pyramid, with 12 currently lining out for League of Ireland sides. Now, Shamrock Rovers, Alex Noonan, Arsenal-bound Victor Osinovuna, Max Kovalevskis, and first-team regular Michael Noonan, along with Cork City's Brodie Lee. Now, the clubs have agreed to release their players despite the clash with the Sports Direct Men's FAI Cup final on November night. O'Brien thanked all the clubs who were under no obligation as Ireland's first two group games on November 5th and November 8th fall outside the international window. A big call from the clubs, no Michael Noonan in particular in a cup final, Paul?
Yeah, maybe. I think he miss one or two European games as well, depending on how far they go into that competition. But I think it's only right, Shane. There's only 3 World Cups available to players. One is the under-17s, the other is the under-20, and the third is, of course, the Senior World Cup. So these sort of opportunities don't come around too often, particularly for Irish players. I think it's only right that, you know, the players are released for such a big occasion. And just looking at the fixtures and the group that they have ahead of them, Panama, Uzbekistan and Paraguay, 2 teams get out of that group. You would expect that Ireland would have enough to qualify and progress to knockout stage. So there's potential to do something really spectacular within this group. I think Victor is one that people can naturally get excited about. He's maybe been held back a little bit in a Shamrock Rovers jersey, given the fact that was big transfer fee on the line. Michael Noonan's already paid for the 21s, has scored for the 21s recently. Obviously done very well for the Shamrock Rovers first team as well. So they're two that probably stand out from a League of Ireland perspective. But there's also a lot of talent that are dotted around Europe that hopefully we will learn a little bit more within this competition.
Yeah. FC Lorient, Hoffenheim, Club Brugge, Almere, some of the club, Benfica as well. So a nice set spread that the Irish under-17s are.
That's the Brexit situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, some of the players have gone to the likes of Portugal and Italy to seek that full-time environment. But yeah, I saw there was maybe one or two comments online about Billy O'Neill.
No Billy O'Neill at Bray.
Yeah, not being involved. Has done very well at Bray. Goals and assists, his contributions have been very high. Hat-trick last week as well.
The argument being made that he's playing men's football and he's performing in men's football. And then,
yeah, people will challenge that with the standard of the First Division. That might be the pushback there, but maybe a little bit unlucky. But imagine he's on standby if somebody was to drop out between now and the start of the competition.
Elsewhere, the Gaelic Players Association's annual survey has found that the vast majority of its members believed the inter-county campaign should run for no more than 7 months, with a split-season model also favoured by a majority. In the GPA's latest survey, to which 3,676 players responded, 92% of members favoured reserving no more than 7 months of the year for inter-county action, with 89% behind the split-season model. In addition, 87% of those surveyed agreed there needs to be a mandated off-season for all inter-county players, with 83% saying they had less than 2 weeks' rest between their county and club seasons. The official return to training day for inter-county GA players has been set for November 21st, with provincial pre-season competitions set to return after a 1 year hiatus for player welfare concerns. Elsewhere, 64% of male players said they're happy with Gaelic Games amateur status. However, 75% would have no issue with inter-county managers receiving payment over and above expenses. We can hear from GPA CEO Tom Parsons, who was speaking to Marty Morrissey.
So we asked players, do they support the current amateur status of the intercounty game, and 64% of players totally support it. And I suppose players see that 350 games development coaches are hired by the GAA. They see the time and effort that intercounty managers are putting into the game, 40, 50 hours, and they probably see that it's only fair and transparent that they recognise that.
They might be in favour, 64% of amateur status, but 75% think players or think managers should get paid. So is the next step players getting paid? Is that where we're going with this?
I don't think so. I think it's really important that, again, we work with government through the government funding and the government grants and the GAA through our player charter to make sure that the playing experience for players is really powerful and top-notch, that players continue to want to really support the amateur status. And I don't think the breaking point will be to make transparent the payment to managers. And also the fact that the GAA does invest heavily, you know, 350 funded games development coaches on an annual basis. So I don't think this will be the breaking point.
87% of players believe there needs to be a mandated off-season for all inter-county players. In other words, they're in favour of the split season. Is a fair analysis.
Players are strongly in favour of the split season. Getting that meaningful time with their clubs is really important, but they're really calling for downtime, you know, in those winter months where they can actually rest and recoup, get time with their family. At the minute, for an awful lot of intercounty players, it's a 12-month season, going from county to club back to county. So the GPA will, from the data we have today, be really calling on the GAA to get a meaningful downtime, a meaningful off-season for intercounty players who give so much to their club and their county.
I don't have a massive opinion on whether it should be professional or amateur, Shane, but I would strongly think that we should all be listening to the players when they're happy with the split season and they want the downtime. At the end of the day, these are the people who have to do all the training and put themselves on the pitch. And even as us as fans, if we would love a longer inter-county season and more games, I do think they have to be listened to, and I hope they will be.
Yeah, no, you would imagine they will be. Just briefly as well, to finish up our news headlines, Irish riders will be in UCI World Championship action this week as Cycling Ireland sent a strong team of six women to the track World Championships in Chile. Lara Gillespie will be seeking to add a World Championship medal to the European gold she won in Belgium earlier this year and will compete in three events over the four-day championship. 20-year-old Emma Jeffers, who continues her transition from BMX and road racing to the track after declaring for Ireland last year, will have high hopes of making a big impact on the global in Irish colours. 2024 Olympian Erin Creighton also competes along with Fiona Mangan and sisters Aoife and Caoimhe O'Brien.
Game on. Association football.
Now, let us continue our Champions League chat. 26 minutes gone in the match. Paul Curry is keeping an eye on. It is still Barcelona 1, Olympiacos 0, and Karat Almaty and Paphos is goalless. And as Ruby mentioned earlier, Paphos down to 10 men. Let us look ahead to this evening's fixtures. Arsenal against Atletico Madrid. Arsenal going well on all fronts, and they can maintain their 100% start to the Champions League when hosting Atletico Madrid at the Emirates. Mikel Arteta's side have posted a pair of 2-0 wins in the Champions League and are 3 points better off than Atleti, who got their European campaign up and running with a 5-1 victory at home to Eintracht Frankfurt on match day 2. So Mark Langdon is also with us. Are you confident Arsenal can maintain their faultless start to the Champions League by beating Atleti this evening, Mark?
Yeah, Shane, I would expect Arsenal to win the game. Atletico have been
not as good as what I think we kind of expect them to be for much of this season. You referenced that outstanding result against Eintracht Frankfurt. I think Frankfurt do concede a lot of goals, and the one thing we know about Arsenal is that they don't concede a lot of goals and that they don't give up very many opportunities. And I think if you look at Atletico's best results this season, they had a 5-2 win over Real Madrid, they had a 5-1 win over Eintracht Frankfurt. Both of those games were at home, and both were against teams that are not particularly stable defensively. And I mean, that's the key difference here. They're up against Europe's best defensive team. And at some stage, you might only take one goal and it might be a set piece, but at some stage I would expect Arsenal to score, and one goal might be enough to win the game again.
Are we seeing a new mental strength to Arsenal this year, or is it far too early to tell, Paul Curry?
Oh, I think we are, Shane. They are a very well-oiled machine at this moment in time. I don't think they've had a shot against them in the last two games, and that's a testament to how good they are out of possession of the football. And, there's a lot of confidence throughout that team. Since they got beaten against Liverpool, they just seem to have been ploughing through games and picking up 3 points. It's hard to know what sort of game we'll get tonight. You think of Atletico Madrid, they're such a defensively sound proposition that they will sit back, and I'm sure they'll draw Arsenal onto them, and Arsenal themselves are so comfortable in a defensive line as well. So I'm not sure we'll get that free flowing football that you might expect when two big sides go up against one another, but I'd certainly fancy Arsenal here. Atletico Madrid haven't won on the road all season in both the Champions League and in La Liga, and with Arsenal in the form they're in, like Mark mentioned, it might just be one goal that will see them through. So confidence must be sky high in that dressing room. I'm sure if Arteta had his way, he'd love for Gyökeres to just get on the score sheet. It's been, a bit of a long time since he scored. I think he's 9 games now without a goal. But outside of that, everything has just gone so well for that football club.
Mark, it's hard to know with the new format Champions League what the best way is to approach it. Obviously, Liverpool went unbeaten in the group stages last year and ultimately didn't end up winning it. But what would Arsenal be thinking? Two more wins, they should be true, and they can concentrate the Premier League a bit more, or what way would you be looking at?
It's hard to know, because we are only in the second year, and I think that managers and clubs are still trying to work it out. I think the most important thing is to finish in the top eight, first of all. That gives you one round that you don't have to play through. So I think that's important. Even if you expect to win that game, the fact that you haven't got to play in two midweeks and you get those three, with the amount of games that teams have to play now. So I think that's the most important thing. Once you finish in the top eight, I think you will then start to see rotation and maybe some of the lesser players come in, although Arsenal's squad is absolutely stacked and difficult for them to put out a bad side at the moment. My own kind of personal view is that you still want to do as well as you can in the league. I know Liverpool, it didn't work out for them last season, but I think they were just really unlucky to bang into Paris Saint-Germain. You want to give yourself the best available opportunity, and I think finishing a high seed does give you that. You're more likely to play a worse team. Doesn't mean you will do, but you are more likely to.
Elsewhere, Newcastle host Jose Mourinho's Benfica this evening, having lost 2-1 to Barcelona in their first game at St James's Park, Eddie Howe's side bounced back with a 4-0 away win over Union Saint-Gilloise, while Mourinho's men lost 1-0 to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge on match day 2. We can hear from Jose Mourinho speaking about Newcastle legend, the late Bobby Robson.
The opportunities that he gave me, he took me to Barcelona, and that door is a huge door that was only open by Sir Bobby. The second thing is what I've learned at the football level and at the human level. And the third thing was the trust that he put in myself. So I consider that it was very important for my career. I tried to pay with everything that I gave. And what did I give him? I don't know. I only know that I gave everything I had, and that for me is enough.
Jose Mourinho speaking about the great Bobby Robson there. 3 of Newcastle's first 8 Premier League matches, Paul, ended goalless in Saturday's 2-1 defeat at Brighton, left them 13th in the table. I know they have a few injuries to contend with, but what Newcastle are we going to see this evening?
I'm sure they'll be right at it. They tend to be for these Champions League nights, particularly when they're playing at home. And going up against Benfica, I watched Benfica when they went up against Chelsea in the game of Stamford Bridge, and they don't strike me as a Benfica that we've maybe seen with some of their squads over the last 5 years, which is dotted with South American talent. It feels like maybe the best players being cherry picked out of Benfica at this moment in time, and it's going to take maybe a bit of recruitment to get them back up to those levels again. But Mourinho's done an okay job since he's gone in. He steadied the ship somewhat. A draw against Porto, we won on the weekend. So you know what you're going to get when Jose comes to town. It's going to be very difficult to play against. They were like that when they went to Stamford Bridge with kind of two banks of four and shut up shop and try transition and hit Newcastle on the counter-attack. But Newcastle are going okay, Shane. Like, obviously, the Isak situation was very unsettling at the beginning of the year. I'm sure they're delighted that Fultomada has gone in there and started scoring goals. It's about maybe getting some of those players back off the injury table and back into the starting lineup, but still looking for that balance at the top end of the pitch with Alanga coming into the team. Anthony Gordon has started this Champions League campaign quite well. I think they'll have enough to get over the line. And talking about, you know, progressing in this competition, I think it was 11 or 12 points that got you through to the next stage of the Champions League. That's what got you there last year. I would be very surprised if Newcastle weren't getting through to the knockout stage of this competition.
Mark, would you agree with that? Do Newcastle have the attacking power to break down Benfica, who are unbeaten in Liga Portugal?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I think Newcastle at home are a different beast. So when they're away, obviously losing at Brighton at the weekend, I'm not sure, just to agree with Paul, I'm not sure there's much in this Benfica team, really. You know, they competed well enough at Chelsea a couple of weeks ago, but didn't felt like that they had too much sort of going forward to hurt. What I still think is a good Premier League side and one that's in a false Premier League position at the moment. So, if I think that Newcastle are a kind of top six Premier League team, and I think that they'll be around there come the end of the season, I think at home to Benfica, you've got to be sort of thinking you win that game, because, you know, you win your home games, and they've already lost, of course, to Barcelona and got the points back against US G away from home. But yeah, this is quite a big game for Newcastle because it's not simple for them to qualify. So, it's probably more important for them than, say, it is for Arsenal against Atletico.
Villarreal host Manchester City after taking just 1 point from their first two league phase games. City are unbeaten in eight games and have 4 points on the board in this competition after beating Napoli and drawing 2-0 with Monaco. Incidentally, actually, some news from Monaco. Paul Pogba won't be making his debut against Spurs this week. Is this going to be a high-scoring Erling Haaland show, Paul Curry?
It has that feeling now when City play, doesn't it? It's almost like 24 months ago where Haaland scores and Man City win, and it's just a case of how many goals he's going to score.
Rinse and repeat.
His form for club and country is absolutely brilliant. I was thinking about this on the way in, Shane. Is it a case now that teams maybe feel that there's a bit of a chink in Man City, that you can get after them and you can win possession of the ball high up the pitch and cause them problems, and as a result there's more space for Haaland to play in? We've seen more situations this year where Haaland is actually bursting through on goal and finishing off chances. The one against Arsenal kind of springs to mind, where there was a lot of space for him to run into. If you rewind 12, 18 months ago, a lot of that was kind of balls getting to the byline, pulling it back. It was very difficult for City to break teams down. So it's playing into Haaland's hands. And, you know, you go to Spain, the likes of a Villarreal, they tend to be like possession-based teams who like to have a feel of the ball, who maybe give you chances within these games. And it feels like one where Haaland will ultimately be on the score sheet again. I still don't think defensively they're right. They're not as solid as they were in years gone by, where they would just dominate possession of the ball, not give you opportunities. I think this would be an open enough game, but it's one that you would expect Man City, and the games that they've had in recent weeks, you would expect that this is one that they will continue on kind of the form of just winning games, give it to Haaland, let him steamroll oppositions and move on to the next match.
And to back up your point, Paul, he should have got a hat-trick at the weekend when a ball through and a poor first touch let him down.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it, just the dynamic of watching Man City now. You know, Pep has definitely gone a little bit more direct. I think it's fair to say that as well. Maybe that stems from the goalkeeper, who's not as comfortable with his feet. Donnarumma's maybe more comfortable just picking a ball out to Haaland's feet and people joining in off him. So those opportunities are coming, Ruby, and the form that Haaland is in, it's scary, the numbers that he's posting.
Mark, the last year's champions PSG are in action as well. They take on Leverkusen at 8 o'clock, 2 from 2. Will they win on the road?
Well, You would expect so, because they've got a lot of quality. They've also got a lot of injuries. We're involved in a chaotic game at the weekend, 3-3 against Strasbourg. I think they're maybe struggling for focus a bit in Ligue 1 at the moment, and I think that's understandable. I also feel, alongside Chelsea going so deep in the World Club Cup, no pre-season has just made things more awkward, just in terms of, even if it's just the familiarity of kind of what you do in the off-season has just evaded PSG at the moment. I was speaking to a Paris fan earlier who's really not happy with the goalkeeper, Chevalier, who's come in to replace Donnarumma, who you were just speaking about. Donnarumma been so impressive at Man City, I'd say. The same has not been said of his replacement. So, he's got big gloves to fill. But PSG, player for player, should be able to win this game, even with a few out.
Gentlemen, let's chat about some managerial appointments. So Graham Potter has a new gig. Sean Dyche is with Nottingham Forest. But last night, Keith Andrews, Brentford defeated Nuno's West Ham. Can Keith Andrews and Brentford maintain this run? We all hope he can maintain this run, Paul Shirley.
He's absolutely flying, isn't he? And I'm delighted for him. I was quite worried at the beginning of the season. I think
a lot of people were.
It was their opening game, Sunderland, if I recall, and they were beaten, I think. And just started to worry about what might lie ahead. It was a 2-1 defeat to Sunderland. But he's really turned it around. I mean, the win against West Ham, the performance against Manchester United, even the ability to churn out that result against Chelsea, they're starting to pick up points in the same sort of manner that we saw from Thomas Frank's sides in years gone by, whereby they're very difficult to break down. And with Thiago at the top end of the pitch, they've got somebody who's posing, excuse me, that threat and who can get you those goals. That was really the void that was left from Mbeumo and Vissa of last year. So he's done an incredible job when you think of the amount of departures that went out of the club at the beginning of this season, with Thomas Frank and all those players that I've just mentioned. So for him to still be able to get results and still be in that mould of being that difficult side to beat, he deserves a lot of credit. I do think there's going to be difficult periods ahead where maybe they go a couple of games without a win. The test will be then, can he keep people on board? Can he keep confidence high that they continue to churn out results? But it's a very, very impressive job that he's done, Shane, with how many games he's played this season and the points total that they have.
Mark, how long is it going to take Nuno to turn West Ham around?
that performance last night was incredible in a bad way. A long time. I mean, if he wants to fight it out, I mean, he looked like a manager that was kind of, that was going to be his last game and that they were about to sack him and the fans had given up and the players had given up and the manager had given up. And he's only been there about 2 weeks. So, team selection was very odd, almost maybe pointing to the board that he needs new players. That's wouldn't be the first manager to try that one. Then his substitutions, leaving very experienced player in Callum Wilson on the bench for the entire 90 minutes, bringing a kid on up front that didn't quite look ready for that level either. It's going to take a long time to turn around. I mean, they are a very bad side. They've spent appallingly. And you look at the team and there's just not much there. If they didn't think they were in a relegation battle before that game, and they probably should have done, then they certainly do afterwards. This is a recipe for disaster. Fans are at war with the owners. Players don't look that interested. New manager, no real bounce from him. Yeah, they're in a very bad way.
Barca have doubled their lead. Lopez again, 2-0 against Olympiacos. 41 minutes played. Carrot and Pafa still goalless. Paul Coria, Sean Dyche, the right man to repair Nottingham Forest.
I was thinking about this on the weekend, about what direction that they might go in. And given that they brought Edu in as director of football, I never saw Edu appointing Sean Dyche.
Well, they've gone old school. Ian Wone, Steve Stone, Sean Dyche, who lives locally. It's this proper like Barclays Premier League stuff. This
4-4-2.
But is that what Forest need?
Yeah, it probably does need the structure of Sean Dyche just to get yourself a couple of points. But it just makes the Nuno situation even more incredible when you think of where they were last year, the success that they had on the pitch, to then change it and go such a different direction with a manager who plays such a different style in Ange Postecoglou, to then revert back to type with Sean Dyche. So it's a funny appointment. It feels like to me that it's going to be a stopgap to get them to the end of the season. They'll maybe take stock of where they are, because ultimately I think Eddie will want to lean towards that more sort of expansive game, try to recruit players who can play that system, because that's how Arsenal have played, and that's probably how he has always set up teams and set up clubs to play in that way. So it's about getting back to being the difficult side to play against that they were last year under Nuno, and maybe Sean Dyche is that man. They certainly have the players in the squad to pick up points, and they should, I think, under Dyche start to put a bit of distance between themselves and the bottom three. But you got to get results, and you got to start trying to build a bit of confidence in that side, because last couple of performances, particularly one on the weekend against Chelsea, you would be a little bit worried for some of those players.
Mark, as bad as Forest and West Ham are going, there is still only one team in the Premier League that hasn't won a game, and that's Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Yeah, and they've had, I felt like, a little upturn in performances. Didn't play badly at Spurs. You know, got the point against Brighton, and maybe would have felt like, you know, they could have hung on in that game. And then you go to Sunderland, and there's an opportunity to get more points on the board. I know Sunderland have started the season well, but you still feel like it's a better opportunity than most away games to get points. And they've come up really short and not played well, and sort of taken sort of one step forward and about three backwards. I still believe in the manager. I don't think the manager's a bad manager. They've still got some good players. A couple of their midfielders, you know, play for Brazil. It's probably that sort of Larsson. I think he got his head turned by Newcastle, didn't leave in the summer, but haven't been able to get sort of a run of games into him for too much of this season. It's sort of that up front. Have they got enough about them to score goals? And if they haven't, they're going to need to do something about that in January. But doesn't feel like there's loads of money around at Molineux. So a tough season ahead. I'd still trust them more than West Ham, based on what I've seen this season. But, you know, both are in a bad way.
I mentioned Graham Potter as a new gig. He is, of course, the new manager of Sweden. But I cannot let a European football chat go by without Mark Langdon detailing the lovely romantic story of the new Swedish champions.
Yeah, so Mjällby, a team that I'm sure not many listeners would have heard too much about, a tiny team from Sweden. The population of the town is not that many more than 1,000. It's really a small little village. This was a team that was playing in Division 3 in Sweden less than a decade ago. In fact, on the final day of the season, they won to not go down to the fourth division. Got a new owner in. Not a rich one, not from sort of Saudi Arabia. It wasn't like they pumped money into it. They've just done it the hard way. In fact, one of their sort of slogans is that we can't spend as much as others, but we can work harder than them. That has managed to get them up into the top flight. The manager had leukemia. He had a week off with that and then came back to work. They were in the top flight, and now they've shocked everybody by winning the division. If you believe in expected goals, like, this is an absolute miracle. They're way down the list on sort of all of the data, but at the end of the day, they're champions, and that's all that matters. So a remarkable story, and tiniest of tiny teams, really. I'm not sure it's quite a Leicester because of the depth of the Premier League and how just miraculous that was, but in terms of such a small team winning a league, it's seen as an absolute miracle in Sweden.
Ah, I love it. I love it. That's the pure football stories we want. We'll be getting on to League of Ireland later, speaking of pure football, Paul Curry. Just wrapping up our European football chat, Evan Ferguson was an 80th minute sub in a 1-0 defeat at home to Inter. Como beat Juve 2-0. Milan had a late penalty to win 2-1 at home to Fiorentina. They lead Serie A. Napoli lost 1-0 away to Torino. Just very briefly, Mark, protests in La Liga ongoing.
Yeah, so a lot of the matches, the first 15 seconds, the players didn't play. They just stood there and waited. This is down to something we were speaking about previously with the Barcelona game taking place in the States. And the other clubs are not happy. The fans are not happy. It doesn't appear that anybody is sort of laughing about this, apart from the teams involved. So it's not going to stop anything. The game's going ahead, and maybe it'll take a week of strikes. I think the idea is that you need two teams to play football, and it shouldn't all be about the big clubs. And This feels very much like a move in that direction.
Okay, great stuff. Mark Langdon, thank you for joining us this evening. We're heading for a break. Before we do, Paul Corrie, Bows and Pats played out a nil-all draw. I would imagine Shelburne and Drogheda United fans will be pleased with that.
You say that with a big grin on your face.
I objectively I'm posing a question.
But it's a loaded question.
We're very short in time, but I'm going to make sure we get this one in.
It was an old school, for as a nil-all draw, it wasn't a bad game, I have to say. Anil Reynolds sent off is a big talking point. A second yellow card for pushing Søborg as the teams went into the tunnel at the break. That's going to be a big loss because Bows have Shells on Sunday and they've drawn the last game of the season.
Yeah, I mean, Shells are in a fantastic position now, aren't they, Shane, given the run of form that they've had. But the game last night, you're right, it was almost a bit of a throwback. Some of that was down to the pitch and how boggy it became as the night went on. I actually thought Bows played pretty decent all night. You can certainly see that they're lacking that sort of goal threat at the top end of the pitch. A lot of their build-up play is quite good. And then when it comes to the final third, they either run out of ideas or they just don't have that sort of quality to cut open the opposition. I must say, I thought Joe Redman and Grafowski were absolutely superb at the back for St. Pat's. So it's a game that, it felt the longer went on, neither side could afford to lose. And you could almost see that in how it played out. But it makes it quite a difficult task for Bows or Pats to get themselves into the top three. What they're relying on now is Shamrock Rovers beating Cork in the FAI Cup final, freeing up that fourth spot to become a European qualification. But there's still a lot of work to do. You know, if you look at the fixtures that both of those sides have left.
It's a fascinating run in. There's full permutation on the RT Sport website. Excuse me. Just to mention as well, Mick McDermott abruptly left Cove Ramblers. They have a playoff on Friday. Richie Holland steps in to take them through the end of the season. We're chatting rugby next with Stephen Ferris. Paul Corrie, thank you as always.
Game on. Rugby.
Welcome back to Game On. We're going to turn our attention to rugby and look back at the United Rugby Championship. After four rounds, Munster sit second, Ulster are in fifth, Connacht are in tenth, and the mighty Blue of Leinster are in 12th, Stephen Ferris. They're like a machine in dirty diesel. What is going on with Leinster?
We're early on in the season, Ruby, very much so. But yeah, it's quite a shock, I think, to everybody. Especially with a lot of the players turning out at the weekend for Munster and now having to jump into an Irish jersey, jump on a flight as well and head to Chicago to play against the All Blacks, who are obviously battle-hardened and will fancy their chances against Ireland. And yeah, it was obviously a great game. It was on my way up the road, so I listened to Donal Lennon and Michael Corcoran on the radio the whole way up the road, and it sounded like a ferocious match, and then I managed to catch up with it today. Knowing it was coming on here, and a brilliant like test match sort of level that was put out there by both teams. And unfortunately for Leinster, they made too many mistakes. They weren't clinical enough when they had the ball. Munster certainly were, and you know, some really standout performances by Munster. Jack Crowley and Tadhg Byrne were absolutely exceptional leading from the front. So yeah, is it panic stations, Ruby, with Leinster? I don't think so. I just think that they're missing a lot of cohesion, and you only get that with playing multiple matches together, as you've seen with Ulster over the last few weeks.
I get that, and I see that. But one thing stood out to me, Stephen, which I don't even think is cohesion. When you watch the start of both halves, Munster kicked off in the first half, and they got the receiver. Leinster kicked off in the second half. They got nowhere near the receiver. There was a big difference in intensity and sharpness from the word go to a layman looking at it.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, the old saying that, you know, sometimes it's the team that wants it more ends up getting over the line. And watching the game back today, not that Leinster didn't want it, it's just, you know, the heads sort of looked like they dropped a little bit when they went so far behind on the scoreboard. And then obviously the rain was coming in a little bit. It was very swirly, the wind as well, made conditions quite difficult to really play. But like Leinster sit 16th in the URC for handling errors, 16th, you know, averaging 12.2 turnovers or handling errors per game. Like that's just, you know, crazy to think about so early on in the season. You know, their tackle success are ranked 14th in the league out of all the teams, 84% tackle success. And I know they have this up and in defense, and you know, they back their line speed off D, but you cannot just keep missing tackles and letting
you know, Abraham or Jack Crowley or, you know, Nankivell or Tom Farrell, you know, get a half yard and get a small line break. And, you know, they had multiple line breaks against Leinster and they were very good at executing a couple of those for tries. So, yeah, it's, I think, you know, it's a bit of a, I've heard it today from John Fogarty, a kick up the backside maybe for some of those Leinster players. And I'm sure it's not a happy place to be at the minute. But as I referenced earlier, I don't think it's panic stations. We know this squad is full of quality and they just need a bit more time together.
It is absolutely full of quality, and that's what probably makes it surprising. But flip it the other way around and look at Munster. New management, new team, new season, and they look like it. They look different.
Yeah, they do look different. And I watched the game the week before against Edinburgh, and they were okay. You know, they scored four tries. They got a bonus point win. You know, there was plenty of yellow cards for Edinburgh. They didn't take their chances. I think it was down in Cork that game was played. And Munster looked way off it. Like, you know, they were sort of wiping their brow once the final whistle had went, because they just sort of scraped it. But, you know, they talked about it all week, about lifting the intensity, making it a dogfight, as their head coach talked about. And they just went out there and they fought for every single blade of grass, like, and they had each other's backs, and you know, it was a bit of a Munster of old performance. And that's what people are actually texting me after the game, you know, reminiscent of some of the old days of, you know, Sexton, O'Gara, O'Connell, Leo Cullen, you know, really good ding-dong battles. And I think a lot of people enjoyed not only, you know, Munster getting a good win, but in the manner that they got the win. You know, the physicality, they dominated them, take out the scrum, yes, and they dominated them. And, you know, hopefully Leinster now will have a chip on their shoulder, and, you know, that defeat will sting pretty hard. But congratulations to Munster. You got to give them a lot of credit. Their game plan was brilliant, and you need your star men to stand up and be counted. And, you know, Jack Crowley, Tagburn as a reference, as well as the other 13 guys really did that.
It was nice to see a bit of bite back to it, a proper throwback. And there is the discussion now that, not for one second saying that Leinster losing matches is good for Irish rugby, but it's certainly good to see Munster competing and Ulster unbeaten as well. Can Ulster maintain this run, and how excited are you about Ulster this season?
Yeah, I think, again, it's been a start of the season where they've had a full deck of players to choose from, which obviously helps massively. You know, Ulster have started their best team from the first round, and Leinster still haven't started their best team, and we're, you know, past round five this season. And that's what happens when, you know, multiple Lions go on tour and players are being integrated back in, where Ulster, you know, it feels like it's a fresh start. You know, a line was drawn in the sand after the disaster as it was last year, but I'm telling you guys, they are playing some really good rugby. Some really outstanding rugby. Mark Sexton's attacking coaching has been rubbing off on the players. Jacob Stockdale looks like a man possessed with ball in hand. You know, Stuart McCloskey has given them gain line. James Hume has come back from a tremendous pre-season. He's talked about he's 7 or 8 kgs lighter than he was last year. It looks sharper. And then obviously Balakun, welcome him back in. And Mikey Lowry, who has just been a point of difference for Ulster this year. And, you know, the physicality that they showed against the Bulls when they came to Belfast was off the charts, and they managed to back that up away against the Sharks in South Africa. And, you know, it'd be brilliant if they could go 2 from 2, 10 points out of 10 points in South Africa over 2 weeks. That'd be a brilliant tour. But they are a team to watch this season by all accounts. And, you know, with Angus Bell coming in at loosehead prop for a short stint, you know, they're only going to get that little bit better.
I know you say Ulster have started their best team from word go, but it's not momentum, it's confidence, it's belief. And Ulster look like they have that again, having not had it for quite a while.
Yeah, and like, I've been in teams that have been low in confidence, and I've been in teams that have been high in confidence, but it needs to be directed the right way. And, you know, I think the way the fixture list sort of fell for them also helps, having Dragons first up when they're in a bit of a hole, obviously, and have been for several years. They play okay. They have a match postponed over in Edinburgh, and then obviously they get things going with the Bulls win. And, you know, they just continued on with that. And yeah, it's momentum, like, it's absolutely everything. And I know we're so far away from, you know, the knockouts and, you know, making that top eight, but these boys really seem to be enjoying the rugby. Like, they're just absolutely chomping at the bit, and everybody who seems to come in is playing really well. And you cannot say that any of the players have played poorly. It's yes, the scrum has been an issue, as it was for Munster there the other night, but, you know, the ways and means around that at this moment in time. And when you have a back line that size that gives you gain lines, can offload, and, you know, the trickery of Mikey Lara, you're going to cause a lot of teams a lot of problems.
You most certainly are.
I'm sure Connacht and Stuart Lancaster are going to be bitterly disappointed and frustrated with the manner of defeat against the Bulls. Is Munster in Munster the perfect fixture because there's no need for extra motivation, or is it the worst fixture considering Munster are 4-4?
I never wanted to go away to Munster like that, so I don't think it's a great fixture. I'm sure they'd rather be at home to the Dragons, like, but it hasn't been the ideal start, and part of me, you sit and watching it, like, and you look at the big, I know I've chatted about this before, you know, the big empty stadium behind, and, you know, the lack of atmosphere, and you know, obviously the red card, a 20-minute red card that happened as well. It just feels like they can't get any momentum, where you look at Ulster and they're absolutely flying, and they've, you know, everything they touched seems to turn to a bit of magic. But Connacht at the minute, they look a little rudderless. They look like they're still trying to understand what Stuart Lancaster wants from them. They do have, you know, the pot of three or pot of four with the options off it, but yet everybody's not running the exact lines that you would like. You know, they're not getting to the edges as much as we've seen in previous tenures with head coaches. So, yeah, I think it's going to take a bit of time. You can't judge. It's not like Ange Postecoglou, where you can judge him on a few games and then give him the boot. Like, you know, he needs to be given a good bit of time with this team, because there are a lot of quality players amongst the Connacht ranks. And I've been excited to see how they go this year. I didn't think they would get off to an average a start as I thought, or as has been. But as the season progresses, hopefully they can get their act together and start putting in some really big performances. And with the opening of the stadium, believed to be either end of December or start of New Year for those Christmas New Year fixtures, hopefully we'll get the old Connacht back again.
I'm glad to hear you saying it, Stephen, because I think there's huge potential in Connacht as well, if they can just align the stars.
Yeah, I know. And, like, they've done a lot of, you look at the Connacht teams over the last, again, few years, there's a lot of rotation, you know, a huge amount of rotation. I obviously follow the back rows quite a bit. And, you know, just one week it's Seamus Hurley Langton, next week it's Paul Boyle, next week it's, you know, somebody else coming in there. And there's no continuity. And I know everybody deserves a crack, but again, I reference the way maybe the Munster team has been over the last couple of weeks, and also the Ulster team. They've had that, and they're the ones playing better. So now the questions are going to be asked, Ruby, what about this Ireland team? You know, how are they going to turn out in against the All Blacks? Because there's so many guys that are going to be asked to start this game that have played little rugby and aren't particularly in form. Like, you know, so it's a really interesting one. And, you know, even with, you know, Jimmy O'Brien been taken and Tom Farrell, like, I honestly thought Mikey Lowry would have been in with a chance, because he can play wing and fullback, obviously, but that's not the case. So, yeah, it's going to be a testing one out in Chicago. But, you know, one-off games like that can bring out the experience and the best in people, and we'll wait to see how that goes.
And what does Andy Farrell do? Stick with the tried and trusted? Or go with the untrusted form?
Like, if you're picking an Irish team at the minute on form, you know, there's not going to be, 12 starting Leinster players. Stuart McCloskey is, without a shadow of a doubt, been the best 12 this season so far. So he's going to start at 12. You're going to have Jacob Stockdale either starting at fullback or on the wing, because he's been in scintillating form. You could argue a case for Mikey Lowry as well. Obviously, he's not there. But, you know, in the back row, like, Nick Timoney has been exceptional. Has he been better than the other back rows that are, you know, on that, you know, on the plane? You know, there's a strong argument for it. And obviously the Ulster captain, Ian Henderson, like, who's been pretty consistent. So, Yeah, there's maybe four or five positions that are very much up for grabs. I think he will turn the experience. He will turn the lads that have been there and done it, got the T-shirt, and who are feeling fresh and injury free, and you know, mentally are in a really good spot. And he, you know, that's why he gets paid the big bucks to be the Ireland coach, because he knows his team. He understands their mentality and how to get the best out of them. And you know, that's what all the players rave about. He says the right things at the right time and make sure that they are ready to hit the ground running. So I've no qualms or no negativity that Ireland aren't going to turn up. You know, I think people, you speak to them, they're like, oh, Ireland's, you know, going to go over here with, you know, on, you know, limited game time. These boys are, you know, they're not battle hardened, you know, they need more rugby. But I definitely see them turning up, but it's whether they can match the 80-minute performances that they've had in the past against the All Blacks, especially in Chicago. So, yeah, very excited, very intrigued, I think, Ruby, to see how that goes.
I think we all are. That's 10 past 8 on Saturday week from Chicago. Stephen Ferris, thanks a million for taking our call. We have a quick break to take and we're back with snooker.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, the Northern Ireland Snooker Open is a consistent ticket seller. It's continued to grow since it came onto the calendar in 2016. No Ronnie O'Sullivan there this year, but certainly a very strong draw. Peter Brannigan of the RT Sport Online desk joins us now. Just how competitive and how many stars are there, and is there buy-in? Because it does seem to be growing in popularity, this competition, Peter.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most popular events on the calendar. The Waterford Hall is a great venue for snooker to be played in. So, I mean, yeah, Ronnie's not there. He hasn't been there since 2022. So the tournament continues to grow even when he's not involved. You know, he's a hard fella to kind of pin down. And there are loads of really, really good players there. The likes of Judd Trump, you know, the world number one, Kyron Wilson, defending champion. Sean Murphy is in great form this year. Mark Allen, Antrim, and he's won it twice before. And then, of course, you have players from the Republic as well. We've got Aaron Hill, who's playing a little bit later on, who's had a great start to the season. So, yeah, I think it's a really, really popular tournament, and it certainly has cemented its place in the calendar, Shane.
Well, speaking of Aaron Hill, we can hear from him now. He's having a brilliant season, and he was talking about using missing out on the Crucible as motivation.
My dream as a kid is to be where I am today, playing the Crucible, and not to be one frame away from it. Turn into a positive. I'm not that far away from one of my biggest dreams, so 100% took the positives. Of course, I hurt at the time, but you know, I'm sure I'll be back next year with a fighting chance. Yeah, I feel like it's coming for a long time, you know, these consistent results, but I won't take them for granted, because this game can humble you, you know, quite easy, so I'll enjoy it while it's going well.
Just to update you, Olympiacos have pulled the goal back. It is now Barcelona 2, Olympiacos 1. Peter Brannigan, what is the current state of play with Irish talent in snooker, and how good is Aaron Hill?
Yeah, like this season he really looks great, Shane. He started winning games much more consistently, as he touched upon there, because in previous seasons he's beaten big names. He's beaten Ronnie O'Sullivan, Judd Trump, Mark Selby. He beat Kyron Wilson earlier on this year as well. So he's beaten the best players in the world. But doing it consistently is the killer for Aaron. So he's working with Fergal O'Brien. He's been working with the... Fergal O'Brien was a former professional world number nine who won the British Open himself back in 1999. And it seems to have just been improving his game. He seems to be a lot more consistent than he was before. And I mean, as he said in that clip, he lost to Dave Gilbert by a frame. He lost 10-9 in the qualifiers for the World Championship at the Crucible, but he still managed to come back this season, and he's playing his best snooker. So in his match the other day, he won with two centuries in a 4-2 victory. So, you know, he's really looking good, and he's playing this evening against Barry Hawkins. Now, he'd still probably be the underdog for that game. Barry Hawkins is ranked a lot higher than he is. But, you know, he's definitely making progress. And I kind of feel like he's on the cusp of really doing something big, like winning a tournament, because he's just so improved.
The joys of modern football. Never give out a score update until VAR has checked the goal. It's gone to VAR, so it remains 2-1 at the moment. But there could be another goal. We'll update you on that very shortly. Ruby.
Yeah, that match is at 9 o'clock tonight with Barry Hawkins and Aaron Hill. Judd Trump is in action tonight. John Higgins is also in action at 9 o'clock tonight. Whatever way it goes for Aaron Hill, there's some big names facing him in the round of 16 if he gets through.
Yeah, absolutely. He could potentially be playing Mark Allen by the looks of the draw, which would be a great old match. Now, the two of them know each other very, very well. They play up in the Antrim Sports Club together, so that's kind of like... it's almost like the hub of Irish snooker on the island, north and south. It's where a lot of the players go to practice against one another. So you'd have the likes of Jordan Brown, Robbie McGuigan, Fergal Quinn, who's a new pro this year, who all play up there. And yeah, it would be a bit of an All-Ireland game in the last 16 of the event. But, you know, Mark Allen, speaking of Mark Allen, he's had a great record there. You know, he's won the tournament twice, and he came through last night, even though he was behind three different stages in his match. He finished out with two centuries himself to win 4-3. So you know, if he catches fire, Mark Allen's a great player and could definitely go on and be lifting the trophy come Sunday evening.
Final one for you, Peter. Just briefly, is it fair to say there is a bit of a resurgence in snooker in Ireland now?
Well, like in terms of the pro game, yeah, definitely, because we do have a lot more players. I mean, you know yourself, Shane, from the part of the country that we're from, so many clubs have closed, the likes of Jason's in Ranelagh, Breaks out in Drumcondra, Spalwell. I live in Wexford now, the 147 club is gone. In terms of getting young boys and girls playing snooker, you know, we probably have a way to go. It's like other sports I can name. In the 80s and 90s, we were great at it, and we kind of neglected it, and now we're paying the price of it. But, you know, Aaron Hill is the kind of guy that could inspire the next generation of snooker players to come through. So we haven't quite turned the corner yet, I would say, but, you know, it's certainly better than it was maybe 10 years ago. You know, that era of Ken Doherty and Fergal O'Brien, you know, players didn't really fill that vacuum afterwards, but Aaron Hill is certainly leading that charge at the moment.
Absolutely, and we lost a great snooker hall in Fairview on the north side of Dublin. But that's a story for another day. Peter Brannigan, thank you very much for joining us. I can confirm that it is Barcelona 2, Olympiacos 1. The goal was ruled out, but then Olympiacos were awarded a penalty, so it wasn't exactly fake news, Ruby. It is 2-1, so thank God for that.
Almost right, Shane. Almost right.
We got there in the end. That is all we have time for this evening. Massive thank you for listening. Marie Crowe returns tomorrow with Game On from 6 here on 2FM, so do tune in for that. Today's show was produced by Damien O'Mara and Andrew O'Connor. Our broadcast coordinator was Jarla Holland. Up next here on 2FM, the new music show with Bella De Silva. So from all of the Game On team, have a great evening. We're back tomorrow at 6.
This is 2FM.